From the Radio Ranch in beautiful Sugar Land, Texas, where life truly is sweeter. It's the Bombastic Blogcast for Monday, January 15th, 2024. I'm the G-Man, Dan Gallo.
Hey, G-Man.
There yourself. Defender of the peace, keeper of the justice, purveyor of truth, and one heck of a nice guy. And of course, since it is Monday, let's do the Monday march back to work. Stiffen your backbone a little bit. Take a deep breath. Put a smile on your face, even if you have to force it. And you can fool everybody. All right, let's get things started with
the Daily Denogram.
You got it. Words of wisdom, words of inspiration, brain droppings, or noggin nuggets. You get to make the call. It says here, a smile is the lighting system of the face, the cooling system of the head, and the heating system of the heart. Ooh. I like that. And you might want to remember this. It also increases the value of your personality.
Get off my phone, you jerk!
Let's move along now to the so-called educational part of the blogcast. Let's do this.
Twisted history.
I'm all for it.
Gather around, kids, because a lot of things happen on this day throughout history.
Darn tootin'.
Some cool, some not so cool. Just the same, you need to know your twisted history.
Yes, sir.
You might be quizzed.
Yeah, well, there's always that. All right, kids, it was on this day in 1892, James Naismith published the rules of basketball. You'd think that after all these years, the refs would finally understand them, right? And it was on this day in 1967, the first Super Bowl was played in Los Angeles. Boy, I remember that game. I even remember where I was when I watched it. Watched it on a color TV. Green Bay Packers defeated the Kansas City Chiefs 35-10, and obviously the hype was worth it. I just wish they'd stop using Roman numerals on the Super Bowl posters, because I can't count that high in Roman.
You should be ashamed.
Sean Curvin has an interesting article in the Patriot Journal that appeared over the weekend, and he starts it off by saying, there's an old saying, there are three kinds of lies. Lies, damned lies, and statistics. And the federal government loves to spew statistics. Well, we all know that, and we get them every week, right? How many times a month do they does the administration put forth their jobs numbers, the employment numbers? Anyhow, Americans are finding it a lot tougher to trust the information presented by federal officials as totally factual. I mean, how many times have officials said one thing and then about a week later, maybe even less than a week later, we get corrected or backtracked statements? Happens all the time. And people need to know that government details are correct, especially when it comes to economic news. I mean, this affects the people lowest on the totem pole, the mom and pop businesses. It affects them. And a key economic indicator used by the government and promoted by the president has been exposed as a padded bunch of statistics. Daily Caller reported the original number of jobs reported by the federal government in 2023 was revised down by, are you sitting down? A total of 749,000 jobs, meaning nearly one quarter of jobs thought to be created in the year weren't actually there. How do they get away with this stuff? Now, the revelation comes from the data that was provided by the BLS, Bureau of Labor Statistics, and analyzed by the Daily Caller News Foundation. The government's monthly job growth reports in 2023 totaled 3,140,000 new jobs. But later, revisions subtracted from the total. Now, E.J. Antoni, we've dropped his name before. He's a research fellow at the Heritage Foundation's Grover M. Herman Center for the Federal Budget. And Mr. Antoni said that that pattern of consistent downward revisions has happened in two prior recessions. It's a result of market conditions changing too rapidly for the BLS to adjust their methodology, which in turn causes consistent errors in measuring non-farm payrolls. Now, every month in 2023, except July, had to be revised on the jobs report, excluding December. The final month of the year will be revised, if needed, in reports this month and next. And one striking piece of data was the monthly addition of government jobs that have managed to balloon the total number of government employees to an all-time high of 23 million people. The government is our largest employer. And then the Daily Caller reported that the downward revisions last year over so many months isn't typical compared to the previous 2 years. In 2022, there were only 5 months of negative revisions, and the total for the year was 66,000, according to the BLS. In 2022, there was only one downward revision, with yearly totals being revised upward by 2 million jobs for the year, and the country was recovering from the COVID-19 pandemic at the time. So, Mr. Antoni questioned how the jobs numbers could be going the same negative direction, and by a considerable magnitude as well, if there's no economic downturn. So he says, these patterns in the data clearly indicate that something's not quite right with the number crunching at BLS last year. The more the actual numbers are updated, the less opportunity Biden has to brag about his claims of economic success. And his claims of economic success are absolutely nothing but pure BS. I mean, you go out there and you shop, what, every couple of days you go to the grocery store, you see the prices rising. I went on that rant the other day about my favorite drink, Diet Dr. Pepper. The 16.9 and a half ounce bottles, plastic bottles, six pack, used to be $2.50 prior to Biden taking office. Now they're just under $5. Doubled in price. By how far just under? $4.98. So rounded off, $5. You round it off by 2 cents. So it's $4.98 now. Doubled in price. And that's just soft drinks. Think about the thousands and thousands of other products that American people buy every week in their grocery shopping. How often do you go to the grocery store? Once a week? Twice a week? I'm buying just for myself, so I have a tendency to go to the grocery store every couple of days, buy a handful of items, and then cart them out to the car, bring them home, put them in the pantry, and that's it. And as I see my daily provisions getting a little bit low, I grab my phone, punch up Notepad, and start making notes to myself. Here's what I need. So the American people are finding out day after day that prices are still going up, regardless of how much the government tells you inflation has slowed, and it has. I'm not arguing that point. It has slowed, but it hasn't stopped. And how much have prices gone up over the last 3 years? A lot. Now, naturally, gasoline is down a little bit, but that's because it's an election year. That always happens. Remember how much gasoline went up under George W. Bush, and then election year? The prices came back down. But they don't come down to where they were. For instance, right now, they're not down to where they were when Donald Trump was president. Because you still have the same old Democrat, let's call it a platform, economic platform. And that is, they're trying to shove us, even though technologically we're not ready to go off to alternate forms of energy, but they're trying to force us into it by cutting off the most sensible and most affordable energy sources. And this is a pattern they will repeat. Believe me, if Democrats take the White House again, even if it's not Joe Biden, this is a policy they're going to repeat. They'll just keep it in place. And they're going to starve the American people out. Let them eat cake. An old friend of mine and I have been exchanging emails lately over this EV program and what a failure it has been. I don't know if you're aware of how many huge plots of real estate spread out all across the country are full of EVs that are unsold. Kind of interesting, too, to consider how this is going to affect Elon Musk, because there are a lot of unsold Teslas as well. But the big three out of Detroit and Toyota are cutting back drastically on their production of EVs. People don't want them. And that's just really a microcosm of the overall alternative energy program that's being championed by the Biden administration. And Mick Farthing, writing in PJ Newsletter, says that it appears Joe Biden's biggest legacy, and he put that word in quotes, in office is going to be his failed green agenda. The president has pushed for billions, if not trillions, to be spent on switching Americans to green alternatives. And the reason it's failing is because it's still not practical. It's not practical on an economic basis, a financial basis, nor a technological basis. And Farthing says, yet in time and again, yet time and again, his administration has failed to succeed. Americans are not buying EVs, and companies who gambled on his plans are reversing course. Well, it's true. To make matters worse, Biden tried to pass a rule that would pass on taxpayer funds to Chinese-made charging stations, cutting out American companies. But both Republicans and Democrats, we've got to give credit where credit's due here, Republicans and Democrats joined to stop him. There was a story from Fox News that said that the House voted Thursday evening to strike down President Biden's decision to waive Buy America requirements for taxpayer-funded electric vehicle charging stations. The vote Thursday comes 2 months after the Senate passed the resolution, which was authored by Senator Marco Rubio of Florida, Republican, of course, and introduced in July in a 50-48 vote with Senators Sherrod Brown of Ohio, Joe Manchin of West Virginia, John Tester of Montana, and Kyrsten Sinema of Arizona, all of them Democrats with the exception of Sinema, she's an independent, joining Republicans. The resolution will now make its way to Biden's desk, though the White House has stated the president will veto it. But then again, the Senate has the authority to override the veto. Now, the House voted 209-198 to strike down a waiver on the Buy American requirements for taxpayer-funded EV charging stations. It's a very close vote, which makes me nervous. Biden issued the waiver so the Chinese-made charging stations could benefit from American tax dollars. And this shouldn't come as a surprise to most Americans because Biden's green agenda has seemed to benefit China tremendously. His move to get more solar panels installed on American homes directly benefited China, because they make most of the solar panels sold throughout the world. And Biden's restrictions on American oil and natural gas have been a benefit to China and other competitors. In a move that's baffled Americans, including myself, he sold off most of our strategic petroleum reserves, not to U.S. consumers, but to China. Somebody explain to me where that's not treason. So if his waiver goes through, Chinese companies are going to receive tax funds meant to help American companies. And you got a lot of people who've accused Biden of doing the bidding of the Chinese Communist Party. I mean, face it, his administration's gone soft on the regime, despite it spying on Americans and threatening our allies. But it looks as if even Democrats are starting to call out Biden's favoring of the foreign nation. What I'd like to know is what has taken them so long. In a recent turn of events, Dr. Jill Biden has publicly criticized members of the Republican Party for what she describes as a horrible act. See, during congressional hearings, nude photos of her son, Hunter, were displayed, prompting the First Lady to speak out against the perceived cruelty of the action. You may have to take a deep breath before hearing the rest of this, but the First Lady's rebuke came amid heightened political tensions in Washington, I guess you could say, where partisan divides seem to be deepening, you think. Her statement underscores the personal toll that political battles can take on individuals and their families. Use of private photographs in a public forum has raised questions about the boundaries of political discourse and the ethics of such actions. But then again, the argument could easily be made that in the case of Hunter Biden, he posted so many of his private photos all over the World Wide Web. Well, we go now to MSLSD. This is a clip saved for us by conservative blogger Benny Johnson. He got some audio here from Mika Brzezinski, who is just an out-and-out commie and a total dingbat. And she was questioning Jill Biden. Here it is.
How have you been coping personally with the onslaught of accusations against your husband and your family, including and especially Hunter? It's the focus of a House Oversight Committee hearing, holding him in contempt, obsessing over him, showing pictures of him during vulnerable moments in his battle with addiction on the floor of the House. This would crush any family.
Mika, I think what they are doing to Hunter is cruel. And I'm really proud of how Hunter has rebuilt his life after addiction. You know, I love my son, and it's hurt my grandchildren. Mm-hmm. And that's what I'm so concerned about, that it's affecting their lives as well.
Well, of course it is. And of course she loves her son. And of course she would come to his defense. But, you know, maybe it would help if she took him off into a closed-off room somewhere and sat down and read him the Riot Act and gave him a real come-to-Jesus moment regarding his conduct. Now, let's just go ahead and, for the sake of argument, say that he has privately repented for all of his wrongdoing and his behavior, because there are no saints among us, present company included. Okay, who knows why he was doing the things he was doing? Drug addiction is something that it's hard to describe. It's slavery, really. That's what it is. Drug addiction is slavery. And when you commend your spirit to the world of drug abuse, you are no longer your own person. Now, maybe he's crawled out of that. I certainly hope he has. But there's still the reality of the corruption within the Biden family, and that's what this is all about. That's why this is so public. Republicans involved in the hearings have been defending their decision to show the photos, arguing that it's part of their oversight responsibilities. And I really believe that claim is more than adequate. They claim that the images are relevant to ongoing investigations into Hunter's business dealings and potential conflicts of interest. If there weren't questions about Hunter Biden and his operations, his money laundering operations, particularly with Ukraine, and how it affects the current resident of the White House, none of this would be an issue. Those photos would never have been shown. And the GOP is contending that shedding light on these matters is definitely in the public interest and necessary for transparency. I can't argue with that. But there are critics of the GOP's approach, and they see this move as a low blow and an invasion of privacy. They're arguing that the display of images like this isn't only irrelevant to the investigation, but also a deliberate attempt to embarrass and discredit the Biden family. And far be it for me to ever want to defend that side of the political spectrum, I think to a degree they have a point. This tactic, they're saying, distracts from substantive policy discussions and undermines the dignity of the proceedings. Well, let's just say for sake of argument that that's true. But they're not coming clean with us. The people on the left are trying to shovel everything under the rug. And of course, the First Lady's supporters have rallied around her, expressing, all those buzzwords, solidarity, and condemning the Republicans' actions. They emphasize the need for decency in politics and the importance of respecting personal boundaries. The incident sparked a broader conversation, too, about the nature of political attacks and the impact they have on the individuals involved. But on the other side, some conservative voices have expressed concern over the implications of the First Lady's comments. They argue that while the method of presentation may be questionable, the underlying issues related to Hunter Biden's activities warrant scrutiny. Why wouldn't it? They're maintaining that the focus should remain on the potential misuse of influence and the need for accountability. There's so little accountability these days, regardless of the individual's relationship to those in power. So the controversy has highlighted the delicate balance between personal privacy and public accountability. And as the debate continues, it still remains to be seen how this incident's going to affect the political landscape and the ongoing investigations into Hunter Biden. There's a whole lot there we still don't know. And what's clear is that the First Lady's condemnation has brought national attention to the issue and set the stage for further discussion on the limits of political warfare. Yeah, the First Lady's strong words reflect a growing concern over the tactics used in political arenas. But when it comes to political tactics, I don't think anybody can surpass the radical left. And I'm talking about the radical left within our government. I mean, look what they're trying to do to Donald Trump, trying to prevent him from appearing on the 2024 election ballot. Don't talk to me about political tactics. So, all we're looking for is the truth, right? I mean, that's certainly what we profess to want. We want the truth. And while that search for truth and transparency and accountability is vital in a democratic society, the methods employed to get to these ends has to be taken into consideration. Because Lord knows the nation's watching. The unfolding drama serves as a reminder of the complexities and challenges inherent in the intersection of politics and personal life. But more importantly, it also is a reminder of the complexities and challenges inherent in a truly democratic society. American intelligence officials have raised alarms over the potential threat posed by the Lebanese Hezbollah terrorist group. Concerns are not unfounded. You need to know that. There are recent reports suggesting that Hezbollah, with its sophisticated network and Iran's backing, of course, could be planning strikes against American interests both abroad and on U.S. soil. Dare I bring up the southern border again? It's wide open. If they want to bring arms, ammunition in, that might be a little difficult. But they can certainly bring in their army. The surge in violence in the region over there has been marked by a significant number of attacks on U.S. forces, both in Iraq and Syria, with a reported 127 incidents since mid-October. Now, this uptick in aggression underscores the volatile environment. It's a powder keg where American personnel operate overseas and highlights the persistent danger of terrorism that extends beyond the battlefield. You have to wonder, would we even have this type of warning if Biden kept the border under control? And despite Hezbollah's restraint from major assaults on Israel or U.S. troops in the latest conflict, their history of targeting Americans is well documented. You know, their past activities include surveillance of American and Israeli targets in Panama and New York City by U.S.-based operatives in 2011 and 2012. The infamous 1983 attack on the U.S. Embassy in Beirut. I don't think anybody's ever going to forget that. 63 American lives lost in that. That remains a stark reminder of the group's capacity for destruction. And they still have that desire. That hasn't abated in any way, shape, or form. So in light of these threats, the State Department's taken protective measures to bolster security at the U.S. Embassy in Lebanon, aiming to protect diplomats from potential attacks. The increased vigilance, of course, reflects the gravity of the warnings issued by intelligence officials regarding Hezbollah's capabilities. Now, their leader, Hassan Nasrallah, has publicly warned of strikes against U.S. bases in the region over there, holding America responsible for the war in Gaza and shielding Israel from international condemnation. These statements, along with FBI Director Chris Wray's warning about the rise of violent extremism, paint a concerning picture of the security landscape facing the good old USA. See, domestically, there's a growing concern that open borders have been facilitating the entry of Hezbollah sleeper cells into the country. And let me paint you another picture. Remember the razor wire that Texas law enforcement officials have laced along the Texas-Mexico border? Remember, the federal government came in and started cutting the razor wire and getting it out of there? Just what side of this conflict is our own presidency on. I'm telling you, this president we have in the White House is an anti-American president. An internal memo from the CBP, that's Border Patrol, San Diego Field Office, highlighted the risk of jihadists inspired by the conflict between Israel and Hamas, because this thing opened up a whole, it tore a scab off of an old wound where Hamas is concerned. Because you just know they're going to attempt, they probably already have successfully entered the United States through the southern border. And this possibility adds another layer of complexity to the overall counterterrorism efforts of the United States. Lots to be concerned about, and internationally, the effectiveness of global cooperation in combating terrorism was demonstrated when Mossad, which is Israel's secret service, assisted Brazilian law enforcement in thwarting planned Hezbollah attacks in Brazil. And this operation was successful. It was known as Operation Trapiche, and it led to the arrest of individuals linked to the terrorist group and prevented potential attacks on the Brazilian Jewish community. There's a lot we have to be concerned about. And you know what? Our government, the current administration, needs to refrain from issuing stupid statements, particularly through the mouth of this guy, Alejandro Mayorkas, who I think is going to be impeached. The border is secure. You know, down here in Texas, we have an old saying, you can't BS an old BSer. To the Comedy Corner with Adam Yenser.
I was really glad they decided not to cancel the college football season last year, because I'm a big college football fan. Anyone else here? Nice. I love college football. The one thing I've never been able to figure out, though, is how is Army not the best college football team? Like, there's just a bunch of school students playing football against each other. And then for some reason, one of the teams is the United States Army. The most elite fighting force on the planet, and they're not that good. Doesn't make any sense to me. How do you defeat Nazi Germany, Soviet Russia, and the Islamic State in Syria, then lose to Western Kentucky? They've also lost to the Warriors, the Spartans, and the Trojans, which means other teams are naming themselves after armies than beating the actual army. It's got to be weird for the team playing the army, because like everything before the game celebrates the army. First, jets fly over the stadium in honor of the army. Then everyone sings the national anthem in honor of the army. Then the announcer's like, "Will everyone please stand and clap for the man in seat 3B. He was in the army." Then they're like, "All right, now let's humiliate the army." Beat them 54-12. It's true, the only branch of the military with a good football team is the Air Force, but they only have a ground game. It makes no sense at all. Done a lot of hiking this last year. I went to Joshua Tree a lot because I live in Los Angeles. And I don't do drugs, but I found out whenever you go to Joshua Tree from Los Angeles, people always say the same thing. They go, "You have to do mushrooms. Joshua Tree is beautiful on mushrooms." Which sounds like this amazing experience at first. But you know what else is beautiful on mushrooms? Your garage. Or the bathroom at a Wendy's. Everywhere is beautiful on mushrooms. Joshua Tree is not doing the heavy lifting there. You'd be like, "Oh, you have to see the back seat of my car. It's beautiful this time of year on mushrooms." The whole selling point of Joshua Tree should be exactly the opposite. It should be like, "You have to go to Joshua Tree. It's so beautiful, you don't even have to do mushrooms." No one ever told me anything like that about other national parks. No one's ever been like, "Oh, you have to go to Arches and do meth." Although I'm sure some people have if you've driven down that way. I love visiting in the national parks. You know, they're beautiful. They showcase, like, the wonders of nature that God created for us, which is amazing. But I don't know if God would be happy with, like, what we've done with the national parks. You know, like, arches, you know, he's like, "Oh, I made all these beautiful stone arches for you. What do you call this area?" And we're like, "That's the devil's garden." And he's like, "Oh, and what about all these mountains and canyons I made for you in California?" And we're like, "Devil's post pile, devil's punch bowl, devil's canyon, devil's backbone." He's like, and the rock formation I made in Wyoming, you call it the Lord's Hill or Mount Jesus. And we're like, "No, that's the Devil's Tower." He's like, didn't you name anything after me? It's like, well, in Colorado, we have an area called Garden of the Gods. He's like, well, you tried, but you made it plural, like I specifically asked you not to.
Make it a marvelous Monday. Thanks for listening. We'll catch you on tomorrow's Bombastic Blogcast. Remember, no such thing as spare change, free lunch, or too much horsepower. And be sure to take some time today just to thank the good Lord that you're an American.
You mean that's it?
See you tomorrow, G-Man.